Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast about board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And this is episode 478, Games That Need an Expansion. We'd like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new review. Anthony, we got a new episode. It's reviewing all of the great games that are just almost quite somewhat there, but they just need a little something.
Little something. We did this episode last in 2018.
Wow.
Episode 167. And we talked about the games that needed an expansion, right? So we have 10 games from that list. We're going to revisit that list. We're going to talk about the ones who actually eventually got an expansion. For some, it happened.
We were young and we didn't know any better.
Yeah, there's more. And then a bunch more games that have come out since that also need expansions because they're either not quite there or we think they could be even better.
It is possible to make a game better. That used to be the thing that expansions were known for. And now they're known for being prepackaged in a Kickstarter that you now must buy because reasons.
Yeah, it's
money
annoying.
Reasons.
Yeah, like, I was going through my collection being like, what other games need expansions? And I'm like, oh, that game would be good with an expansion. I'm like, no, that game already has one, and it's not very good because it was, like, thrown in a Kickstarter, and it's not playtested at all.
No.
And it's just a bunch of bloat and nonsense. The game could use an expansion, but not that one, but they're never going to do it because they did the Kickstarter. Okay, fine. That's all the games now. So,
yeah, I typically think, like, again... Not to be that guy as far as back in the day is concerned, but back in the day, the core game got played by the public. Again, you can only play test a game so much. But when the game gets played by the public, you get feedback as a designer, as a publisher. And then you address that feedback, again, typically somewhat, you know, through an expansion. And again, we did an episode, one of my favorite episodes, where we talked about the different types of expansions. And they're kind of like certain tropes that come out as far as expansions are concerned. But they are typically more or less, other than just revitalizing a product or reminding you that thing actually exists or getting it to the table again, was there to like make the game better. And we got a list of games that need to be a little bit better because they're missing out on a key element. At least we feel so.
Right. Yeah. Like, you know, and some games just kind of play themselves out.
Sure.
And maybe something would bring them back to the table after several years. Some of the games from our last list were that. They were like,
yes,
this game was good. We liked it. It's kind of played out. We need more stuff. And here's how you could do that.
So, and some games need to stop making expansions.
That's a different list, but we do have it. We have that list.
Damn it. Stop it. We can either afford our money or our sanity. Dear God, stop producing those expansions.
Yeah, maybe next week we'll go through all the games that need to stop making expansions. I think we have a list of at least five.
I'm already having some terrible flashbacks. And collect that again and collect it again and get the new expansion. The new expansion fixes the old expansion, but has modules for the new expansion. Stop. I don't want any more. I can't fit it on my shelf. I can't fit it in my brain.
Yeah. It, like flashback to the video games that like when you buy everything together, it's like $400. You're like, what? How?
Oh, I'm not going to play without the new expansion. Oh, wait a minute. I only play with the core game set. Oh, there we got new people playing. We can't play with. No more. But that's for next week. That's not this week. This week is the games that need the expansion. So more of those things. We're sending positive vibes out there. Yeah. We're sending out vibes to our designers and publishers out there and being like, listen, we got a thing for you. So listen to the feature because we're going to go look back and then obviously see what we need today. But Anthony, before we go on to all that kind of fun stuff, crazy stuff in the world happening, of course, Fantasy Flight is kind of doing a thing. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, when we talked about it not too long ago, was that last week, week before?
Uh-huh.
We've got a new version of the Star Wars deck building game.
Yeah.
And it was like rumored before. It's like a weird, like off color picture that someone had taken at some event. I don't know.
Yeah.
But Fantasy Flight finally posted it to their website yesterday when we're recording this. So last week, Star Wars, the deck building game, Clone Wars edition.
Ooh.
Yes, it is official. So if you go to the website, you can now see several examples of the cards. We've got AT-RTs. We got Obi-Wan Kenobi. We got Aayla Secura. We got General Grievous. We got Jar Jar Binks.
Oh, you went too far.
He's there, man.
He's there. You went too far. We were almost there. I was almost going to click the button.
I even skipped a few just to get to Jar Jar for you.
All right. Fine.
It's a terrible card if it helps.
It's purposely a terrible card.
Terrible, terrible card. It's a card you pass to your opponent when you play it because it's that bad. The game is a standalone. It's not an expansion. It's a standalone expansion. You can play it by itself, or you can separate out all the decks and draft them out and play them in whatever permutation you want. They even have like a description of how to do that on their website of, you know what, if you want to mix and match, go for it. Here are the ways to do that. You build your decks using the cards from the Empire, Rebel, Republic, or Separatist decks, and then the neutral cards based on the edition of the game that you're playing with. So it's a little fiddly, but you can do it. So if you want to play Separatists against Empire, go for it. It is possible to do that. But that's all the information we really have right now. It's coming out in August, which means they'll probably launch it at Gen Con. And it's cool. Like, I'll probably pick it up at some point. The Star Wars deck building game, when it's not on sale, is like $40. So meh. Yeah. And I already have it, so double meh. But my son in particular really likes Clone Wars versus original trilogy stuff, so I'll probably still get it. Let's wait for it to go on sale like the old one has.
Sure.
But it's looking cool.
Maybe you can switch him off the pay-to-play one to the nice buy it once and actually be able to play it?
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be good.
The old switcheroo?
Yeah. I mean, we've been playing a lot of Star Wars Unlimited, but I will say he's not really like we're still mostly on the starter decks.
Okay. That's really good.
We have bought some like the boosters, but I don't think I'm going to buy boosters from the second set, which come out next week, because we're not really using the ones we have from the first set. And why spend that money, right?
Sure.
So
it depends on what's in the next set.
Maybe it's like Mandalorian stuff, and he really likes the Clone Wars stuff, which is fine. It's great. I don't like it or dislike it. But this might be perfect for that because it is exactly what he knows.
Yes. Like, and it's a lot. I don't know. I don't want to downgrade it. It's I think having played both of them, I think they're fairly similar as far as complexity is concerned. I mean, obviously you're not
right
deck building in advance. You're making your deck as you go, but I don't know. I mean, they're both rather good. I think he might enjoy the structure of that, like the limitation as far as like once you get into boosters and other packs, like I think that's when it becomes overwhelming.
Yeah, and we really just haven't done that very much. I think for that exact reason, that yeah. It is kind of overwhelming. Like
it becomes a meta issue.
Hey, yeah. We have this whole box of boosters that we bought. Here's all the cards. Here's all the different things. We have enough Mace Windus if you want to build a deck around Mace Windu. And he's like, I don't know. Like,
who do I throw Jackson? In
with? Yeah, like, who do I throw in with Mace Windu? I don't know. Like, it's a Clone Wars thing. He's like, kind of.
Yeah. Like,
so I was like, okay, fair enough. Let's just play the base game with what it comes with. And I'm like, if we're just playing the base game of a CCG,
yeah,
then I don't need to be buying CCG stuff. Let's just buy the deck building game.
And the CCG certainly forces the meta upon you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Playing thematically is almost a detriment. You have to play towards the meta, even if you just whatever hand you get, you can't be like, well, he wouldn't be working with so-and-so. Like, no, that's out the window. That's not a thing.
And like the meta decks right now are super, super not canonical. Like if you care about that stuff and the way they're building them, like the Sabine deck is like, it's up there. And I'm like, but the way you build it, I'm like, that's not any of the people she would have interacted with. And but that's not how a CCG works. And right. So, yeah, the deck building game is great. I'm hoping to get kind of pushed back in that direction.
And that thematically, you can certainly play out the story because everything's from that era and on that particular side. And then if you want, you could pull in some neutral characters, but you don't have to.
Right.
Which is a lot of fun. So,
right.
And even destroying characters on that mid-row, as far as the market's concerned, is also a lot of fun.
So. I love that. It's my favorite mechanic in that game.
Yeah.
Yes. That is the best way to fix a two-player deck building game.
Yes.
Is to just make it possible to do that. It's not something you can do in most of the games.
The number of times I've played a tabletop game and you can't refresh the market, I've honestly wanted to flip tables over that. And you're like,
yes.
Like, can someone please buy one of these junky cards so we can see something else during this game? They're like, I'm not buying that. Like, well, I'm not buying that. I'm like, well, there goes the game. Like, that's... Nope. I don't want to do that. Oh, I can blow up the other stuff and that'll actually even give me points to do that? Yes. Yes, absolutely. I will do that. That will be all the kinds of fun. So, yeah. No, I was lean CCG, but now I'm going back to the deck builder, man. I think that's working for me.
I'm there. That's what I'm doing.
All right. Sounds cool. Yeah. No, so... A lot of fun stuff and happening out there in the BGG board game geek kind of world out there. Anthony, just mention ever so briefly, just because it's a little bit crazy, but there was a game on Kickstarter that on BGG is like the worst rated game of all time.
Yeah.
And somehow made $1.2 million because, I don't know, NFTs or AI or...
Yeah, I think it's mostly... Well, I guess it's both. I guess the NFT thing, I'm like, who's still doing that?
These guys are.
Seriously, who is still doing that? Everybody knows they're a scam. No, thank you. The AI art thing, I am 1,000,000% on the side of the Luddites. Like, artificial intelligence, it's not producing art. It is amalgamating other people's artwork into a new structure. Like, it's not... As an artist myself, as a teacher, I cannot overstate this enough. It is not actually producing anything. It is taking a bunch of other people's work and like blending it together. So when you use that, it's not just that you're being lazy, which whatever, capitalism is about laziness. Whoever's the laziest wins, right?
That's right.
It's you're stealing from other people, and that's what really makes me angry, and that's what makes everybody else so angry. It's not the laziness, it's the stealing. You are actively stealing from other people.
Yeah.
And if you don't believe that, then you're wrong. I don't have to tell you. So I think that's what's making people the most angry. NFTs are like, what are you doing? That's stupid. But the AI artwork and just being like openly like, yeah, this is what we're doing. Who cares? Woof. That's rough. Somehow the stupid game still made over $1 million, though. So I guess enough people don't care or think that that's overreaction or we are actually being Luddites. I don't know.
I don't think it's a bad thing to be cautious, especially when it's based on like such shaky ground to begin with. And if the art itself is on that shaky ground, who's to say what the rules are based on or the mechanics are based on are any better?
Right.
Or if the system that you'll be playing with, especially this is a CCG, right? This is so, you take quite a risk anytime you buy into a CCG, because there is a lot of requirements and needs when it comes to CCG.
They're very expensive. They all factor in the collector's market to their pricing.
Yeah.
And the collector's market doesn't always develop, right? And then the pricing is ridiculous as a result. Like, if there is no value to the cards, paying $6 for a pack of cards is insane.
Sure.
It's all based on that value. So it's how the whole thing is priced and modeled. And that's not these guys. That's every CCG since 1997. But like weaponizing that to an effect and then using AI artwork to kind of shortcut, fast track it, that's I think it's where people get mad. So, to your point, yeah, like if they're willing to just kind of skimp on the artwork, are they going to skimp on the rules? We don't really know because we haven't played the game.
Yeah. So Wonders of the First CCG, what a name, I tell you.
Yeah.
1.4 on BGG.
So bad.
And Kickstarter made so much money and supposedly people backed at the $4,000 and $6,000 level. It's already done, so you're safe from this. But you can certainly still go to Kickstarter or read the endless numbers of comments on BGG, ripping it up and down. I think there's certainly more to this than just even the artwork, right? There's just a lot of other problems and issues to this and things surrounding this. And again, we've been reviewing and even used to do the Kick in the Habit podcast. Like, this is not new. Like, people were faking artwork or stealing artwork from other artists or IPs and trying to put them off as their own, right? And it never ends well. It just doesn't. It just never ends well. Like, even if the project backs, there's lawsuits, there's bad production issues, the company is just stealing money, going to, like, if someone's doing a somewhat shady thing to begin with, you don't, especially when it comes to CCG, do not continue to follow them. It just don't. So, but I guess we'll see. It's a number one game. It's a number one hotness, man, on BGG. How that's not a good reason to be that.
No. I think people forget sometimes what the hotness measures. It's just activity.
Yes.
It's positive, negative. It's the classic all press is good press on BGG. It's literally true. You're number one because you're terrible.
Yeah. So if you've backed Wonders of the First CCG, let us know. I would love to know why, and I am hoping for the best for you and everyone involved with that, because sketchy be sketchy, bro. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
All right. It happens. All right. Well, Anthony, that's what's going on with the craziness out there in the world, amongst other things. What's going on with our Patreon? You got something coming up for us?
Yeah. We are due for a new Patreon specific episode just for our backers. Last couple of bonus episodes we had the Level Up Your Tabletop Teach and Level Up Your Mental Health episodes. They are available as audio presentations on the Patreon if you are a backer at the $5 level or higher, our producer level. But this coming week, and this will be my last publication for a month or so, because I'll be on vacation for about 2.5-3 weeks, is I am revising my top 100 because we,
no,
as you've seen, we are very close to 500 episodes.
Ooh.
So no spoilers, but
spoilers,
what we do, right? So we'll be updating those, have not been officially updated in 2 or 3 years now. So it's time to go back and look at the list and make some tweaks. So I'm going to do a forward looking and backward looking, introspection about how that process works. Like, what am I considering? How does this get evaluated? How do games get ranked against each other? How do games stay put? How do games get booted out? It will not reveal my new top 100 for the eight of you who care, but it will go through the process of building that. Because I don't think we see that a lot. I don't think we see that. There's a million top 100s out there. We don't see how people actually build their lists. They just kind of come out and be like, here's my list. And it could be completely arbitrary and you wouldn't know. So
it's the Rubik building of it all.
Right. Yeah. Like, what factors go into this? And it's not just numbers. It's not just like my ratings. If you look at my top rated games, that's not my top 100.
Sure.
It's kind of a fun process. I enjoy doing it every couple of years when we do it. So I figured, hey, I'll record it. We'll talk about it for half an hour or so and tell you how it goes.
Sounds good. All right. So that's what's going on with us. Anthony, let's talk about the games that we want to get to the table. Let's talk about our acquisition disorders.
All right. For me this week, there is a new expansion up from Leader Games for Oath on Kickstarter. It is up for about 2 weeks more when you hear this, called New Foundations. So Oath is a game from Cole Worley, one of my favorite game designers, designed Pax Pamir, as well as Root, which is my number two game of all time at the moment. And Oath came out, I want to say 4 years ago, I think it shipped. And it is a very asymmetrical, kind of wonky kingdom-building game in which it's not legacy necessarily, but things carry over in the course of play. Like, you really need to play the game multiple times with the same group to get the ultimate amount out of the game. We never officially reviewed this game on the podcast because I was able to play it two or three times with my group back in Pittsburgh, and then I moved to Philadelphia, and that two or three plays was not enough to assess how good the game was and whether it was worth recommending to everybody. I really, really enjoyed it. If I had to throw something on there, I would be like, I'm happy I own this game, but I can't say whether you should buy it or play it or dodge it, or who should buy it or play it or dodge it, because there's more there. Like, the complexity in this game is absolutely emergent. It's depth over breadth. And I love that. I love games that are like, here are the rules. They're a little complicated, but once you get them, you get them. But the depth and complexity comes in repeat plays over time. And that is Oath, 100%. So it's been a weird one. I haven't been able to get it back to the table. I need a group of people who are committed, that are willing to sit down and play the game at least four or five times. It looks like that's kind of the sweet spot to like get something out of this experience. And that's a lot, because it's 2 to 3 hour game. So in the age of everybody wanting new hotness and new stuff and shifting gears and not being able to get groups together, and me in particular not being able to get a group together, I was like, I will revisit this in the future someday. And now we have an expansion. So my gut reaction to this was, I'm not even, why would I need an expansion? There's no way I need more content. I can't even get the old content to the table. And like, the first half of the expansion, the New Foundations part, is exactly that. I'm like, you get like new traits and curses and all these deluxe tiles and new chronicle phase. The game's more complex. There's more depth to it. There's newer denizens, new decks. It's all cool. It makes the game more interesting, but I'm like, I'm not playing it, so whatever. If I do get it to the table, that stuff would probably be pretty cool. But the other half of this Kickstarter is the Clockwork Adversaries expansion, which allows you to play the game solo, which I thought was fascinating, because it's not the kind of game that I would expect to work in a solo context. There's so much interaction and so many elements of how you interact with your opponents carry forward between the games. So how would you do that? And so I'm reading through their Clockwork Adversaries, how they've done it. And, you know, the Clockwork expansions for Root are very good. I think they work quite well for a game that is highly interactive. So I was like, maybe this works. Let's see who's doing it. The designers here are Ricky Royal, who has done the solo versions of several different games, as well as the solo-only game, Renegade, which I absolutely love, one of my favorite solo games. And then also working with Liz Davidson, friend of the show, who runs the Beyond Solitaire podcast. And so the two of them together have put this together. Ricky's worked on John Company. He did the solo mode for Pax Pamir. So he's worked with Cole Worley before. and Guilds of London, which has a great solo mode, despite kind of being a wonky, fiddly multiplayer game. Liz has not released any games before, but has a game coming out soon called Night Witches, and really knows her solo stuff. So she was actually on one of our solo episodes a couple years ago when we did our bracket. So I was like, oh, okay. Well, now I know that the people doing this know what they're doing. It's not like, I love David Turchi, but he does all the solo modes. They get a little repetitive and they're super complicated sometimes. And I'm like, I don't know. That's a lot. It's a lot to invest in a David Turchi solo mode. So Clockwork, I like Roots Clockwork, fairly simple and straightforward. So we have new solo stuff. They promise a way to jump between solo and multiplayer games, which I think is really fascinating. I want to see how that works. We have content that's specific to the solo mode as you face like challenges and stuff, which I love, because that's what makes solo games more fun, is you have a specific challenge to overcome. And it works with the new expansion. So that is what sold me on this. I think I'm in now. It's the solo mode sounds great. The upgrades to the old game are, you know, it's more dice and resin pieces and bandit pieces and new tiles. That's all great stuff. It's all just fancy stuff. I could take it or leave it. If it was just the new Foundations expansion, I would leave it. But with the Clockwork Adversaries, I'm deeply considering picking this up, and then maybe playing it solo will give me the little boost I need to like hunt down people and get them to the table and make them play this game. So Oath, New Foundations on Kickstarter now. Got a couple weeks. If you own Oath already, or if you don't and just want to back all in for everything, I think it's like $200. It's a beautiful production. And if you have the group for it, and I cannot emphasize that enough, you need a group for this. It cannot just be something you bring and drop at game night.
Sure.
You need people who are willing to play at least three or four games. It's not a legacy game, but it's also not just like a casual something. Oath, New Foundation. Check it out.
Very nice. So as far as an expansion's concerned, do you think it's possible that designers, publishers here were like, people are not getting this to the table. No one's talking about it. It's not happening. It did well. It backed well. Maybe that was showing the need for the Clockwork Adversaries? Maybe.
I would be interested to know how this developed. If it was like Ricky Royal and or Liz being like, I'm working on this, and then they pitched it to Leader, sure. And they're like, here's what I got. And they're like, oh, maybe we'll put this in a new campaign. Or if they went out and solicited people, like, we want a solo mode. Does anybody have something that would work? I would be fascinated to know, like, the direction that went.
Because you're like the fourth or fifth person has told me this about this game. Because this was the big game, you know, after Root for them.
Yeah.
And everyone was talking about it. People were excited about it. It got great kind of like preview reviews from like big names and big magazines. And like, this was going to be the thing. Everyone loved Root. This had similar artistic and mechanical kind of aspects to it, but had that whole wondrous idea of the campaign model and all that stuff. And I've never, like, you mentioned the game that you have it, but I have not heard anybody get it to the table. Anyone.
It's honestly the people who I know who've played it enough to get in deep love it.
Great.
They're like, this game is brilliant. I played it the two times that I played it, and I was like, I can see how it could be brilliant. But that's different, right? That's not saying it's brilliant, just saying, like, sure. I can see. It's like watching the first four episodes of The Sopranos. You're like, I can see how this would be very good.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen anything interesting yet beyond like the hook of the beginning of the series.
Sure.
And if you just stop there, then you can't recommend it to people. You're like, yeah, I guess they're mobsters. It's interesting. But not like this is one of the great, you know, stories told in modern media. So I don't know. I haven't gotten there. And I think a lot of people are in the same boat, because people buy games on Kickstarter. They don't play them that much. Right. And maybe that's a miscalculation by Leader. Maybe we're off base here in our assessment of it. But people do not play games the way that designers want them to. They throw it on the table a couple times. They bring it to game nights. If people want to play the hotness, they play it.
Sure.
You get groups coming in and out. You don't have the same group of people constantly playing the same game. At least I haven't historically. And the result is a game like this is hard to get to the table. You don't hear about it very much. So
yeah,
hopefully the expansions address this at least a little bit. The solo mode certainly does, because I can play it by myself. But it's a game I've always wanted to get back. It's been 4 years and I still hold on to it. I'm like, I'm going to get this played somehow. It's going to happen.
And I think that's the interesting thing about games too, is this type of game, as you're mentioning the scenario here, is a paradigm shift for gaming, right? Because the types of games that require a committed group are already doing an RPG.
Yeah.
And then this kind of unique crossover where games like Sleeping Gods or any of these kind of campaign games where you must play the campaign. It's difficult. Again, it's like a lot of those tabletop games where they're like, and it's kind of a miniatures game. And you're like, oof, that's trying to draw in a crowd that already has a thing. And typically tabletop gamers, board gamers, they need the game that they can drop on the table and teach in a relatively reasonable amount of time and then somewhat be a one and done, because it just typically doesn't work for the tabletop meetup kind of vibe.
Right. Yeah. To the point, like when they ran the ARCS campaign, they specifically said different people can come and go in the campaign. Yes. It's fine. And I'm like, it's still not going to happen. That game's going to have the same problem.
Yes.
But at least it's designed around that problem.
Yes.
Oath is not even a campaign game. It's not really designed that way. It's just, it doesn't really work unless the same group of people play it multiple times.
That's what I'm saying.
What it's doing. It's so hard to describe, which is why I haven't reviewed it. It's because I'm like, how do I describe this when I haven't actually gotten through the meat of it?
Yes.
I'm with you. Cole Worley is ahead of his time, I think, a little bit here. I think the more we go along, the more people play it, we'll look back and like, man, that game's brilliant.
But yes,
we're not there yet.
Well, it's a personal campaign to get this to the table,
yes,
at the very least. And sure, like a lot of things. And again, the general meme about RPGers trying to get together for game night. So, like you said, I mean, and to be fair, leader games, that's been their thing with all of their games. Like it's a trip to get into. So very cool. All right, well, on the opposite side of that, the complete opposite, a quick, easy to get to the table game that's based on an IP that pretty much everyone knows, Star Trek. We mentioned this way back in the day. Star Realms is doing a reskin with all the cool Star Trek ships, because Star Trek has a lot of cool ships and a lot of cool factions. And it's going to be hitting pre-order, and people will actually be able to pick this up from WizKid Games. And I'm sorry, Wise Wizards Games. I think always WizKids when I think Star Trek these days. So Star Realms, about, again, two-player game where you're building up different ships that have different abilities that allow you to attack the health points of the other player alongside with bases and super kind of starships and little tiny ships. Well, everything is still true. It looks like just a repasting, redesign. It looks cleaner. It looks neater. I like it better. Now, I'm just not saying it because I'm a Star Trek fan, but also because I didn't necessarily like certain elements of the different races and aesthetics. I wasn't a fan of the blob ships, so to speak. This seems to make a little more sense with actual locations that we might all know, just even if you're not a Star Trek fan, and a lot of the ships that we know. So when you actually see the Enterprise, you know that's a big ship, you know that's a flagship. If you know anything about Star Trek, it's like, oh, the Enterprise, that's the big important ship. Cool. Do you know that the X-Ray 390 blob ship is the big ship? Maybe not so much.
Right.
So this plays a lot better with certainly Star Trek fans, but also with just regular schmoes out there who are like, oh, I know Star Trek, I like Star Realms, or I like the concept of Star Realms, which one should I get? For me as a Star Trek fan, it's a given. But for you who may not be a Star Trek fan, I think this still might be the way that you go, because it's somewhat of a redesign graphically in the pictures and stuff. And again, I think it makes a little more sense because the ships have been thought out in the different weight classes. Whereas again, no fault to the original Star Realms, but I don't know your ships. I don't know your lore. I don't know your galaxies and things like that. So it's like, maybe this, or I'll take maybe this. I don't know if this works together with this, but we'll find out. Here, it makes a lot more sense because we all have that social knowledge that we share. Right. So Star Trek, Star Realms. Yay, it's a thing that you can get to the table, which is honestly might be adding to the future rubrics for our top 100, Anthony. Games that actually can get to the
honestly,
table.
Honestly, it already is in mine. Yeah, I'll talk about it on the Patreon next week, but it's 100% a factor in mine now. I love this. I love that Fantasy Flight's like, we'll make our own. We'll make it slightly different so we don't have to use their IP or anything like that. Star Trek's like, can we just do your game with our IP?
That's right.
Yeah, sure. Like, cool. We're done.
We're done.
Yeah, easy.
There is some cases we don't mind the pasted on, you know, stuff, so to speak. And this is one of those.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm sure there's been a fan who already did it out there and they were like, oh, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah. Why didn't we think of that?
Right.
Now, that being said, thematically, you're playing a combination of ships. You're not just playing one faction. So just like the original Star Realms, which made it a little more odd. Here, I don't know, make up some random story. I do all the time.
Yeah.
So
headcanon cool. For days.
Absolutely. You got to fill in all those gaps. There's just a lot of gaps out there. All right, so those are the games that we want to hit the table. Let's talk about the games that did hit the table. We'll let you know if those games are a buy and you should run out and pick those games up. If those games are a play and you should sit down and enjoy them. If those games are a dodge and you should avoid them. Or, in fact, the games are the dreaded burn, then you should somehow get AI to, you know, replicate it to the nth degree, sell it as an NFT, and make some Bitcoin off of it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Game's terrible, but you might as well make some money.
Do you think on some level that they're like thrilled that they're in the hotness, right? They're
We're
in the hotness. Just don't
If you have so little care for society and human beings as your consumers, then of course they're excited about that. All press is good press, right?
And honestly, of the one hobby that is 100% based on like old school cardboard and wooden tokens, and they're like new AI stuff that has no place here. Like we don't like your kind around here. We don't like your droids. Take your droids out of here.
Yeah, no, we're gonna do it anyway. We made $1 million. You all suck.
It's a tech of the clones here. We don't no. We're not cool with this.
Yeah, not cool. We'll be dead within a year.
It's true. All right, Anthony. So, what'd you play this week?
All right. So I'm going back to another. It's not a classic. It's a modern classic. Cat in the Box Deluxe Edition. So, Chris, you and I first played this at PAX back in 2022. So with a couple fans of the show. And we liked it quite a bit, right?
We did. I have played so many trick-taking games that it was surprising that they could do something new with trick-taking. And also at the same time, you know, a little like you look at something, it's like, oh, that's adorable. That clearly can't be complex and fun. And
right.
It was, even if it was cat based.
It's clever. It's interesting. So this one has hit my table a fair amount lately, partially because I brought it into my classroom because I have several STEM majors, physics and engineering majors. And I was like, oh, this is an interesting game they might be interested in. Right. It's based on Schrodinger's cat and this idea of like probability and palpability of different potential variables. And it's still just a trick-taking game in its heart. So it's like a clever, fun, cute twist on that. It's not really scientific, but it does make you have to think a certain way. And it was a pretty big hit. Like the people in class really enjoyed it. I had several people write about it. And so I've been bringing it back to the table myself. I'm like, oh yeah, this game is good. Like I had fun with this. And you and I most recently played this at Long Island Tabletop with Will. The game is fairly simple in execution, right? But you still have to like twist your brain a little bit to wrap it around it. You have a hand of cards in which all of the suits are the same, right? The cards are numbered from 1 to 9, depending on the player count. It might be from 1 to 7, but they're all the same. They're all black cats. But you have a board between everybody and your little tokens that represent your own suit. And when you play a card, when you're leading, you say which suit the card is. It is a black cat, but you can decide if it is blue, yellow, or green. Red is the Trump suit. You cannot lead with that until someone else has played it. But once they have, you can also lead with that. And so at the beginning of each round, you're going to bet how many tricks you think you're going to win based on the hand you start with, which is my favorite kind of trick-taking game. I think they should all have this mechanic. Any trick-taking game that does not have a betting system to it, I'm like, eh, not a fan. because it gives you some agency regardless of how bad your hand is. You have a terrible hand, you bet zero. You have a great hand, you bet four or five, right? In this particular game, you can choose between three options for betting. It depends on the player count. So with a full player count, it's 1, 2, or 3. The smaller player count, it might be 1, 2, or 4. So you can never bet zero, which I do love betting zero. But in this particular case, with the player count, you can't really do that. But the real fun thing about this game is you can get to a point where you create a paradox. So if you have cards in your hand that cannot legally be played on any of the spaces that are currently available, so let's say that you have previously said, I have no blue cards, which is something you can do. You can say, I have no blue cards because I'd rather play it as a yellow. You can always do this. You don't have to follow in a suit. You can say, I don't have them. And then you remove your token from the blue on your personal player board. And now for the rest of the game, you cannot play blue because you don't have any blue, quote unquote, right? If you've done that and now the blue four is available and you have four in your hand, but all the other fours are covered, you can't play that. You've created a paradox. And now the round is over, right? So that's an interesting element to the game you have to keep track of is, you could jump out of a suit really early, and it could really benefit you early in the round. But later in the round, you might be in a bad place if all the numbers are left in that blue row, and you can't play to any of them, right? Which your opponents could pick up on and play against you. So it's a lot of this kind of maneuvering and thinking about like what your opponents are doing and what you're doing and what's available and what you can do and what you can't do and who's played in the Trump suits and who hasn't. And so it's more complex than just, I have these red cards, these blue cards, these yellow cards. I need to like manage them. It's what do other people potentially have? What cards have already been played? How many suits have been played? How many cards got left out this round? It's a lot of like, you really have to pay attention constantly. And I really, really enjoy that. So Cat in the Box is a fantastic trick-taking game. It's really engaging. It runs a little long. Every trick-taking game has a number of rounds they want you to do. This one is 4 rounds. I feel like that's a little too much. The game drags a little bit. It can go like 45 minutes to an hour. But like any trick-taking game, you could just sit down and play one round and call it a day. That's up to you. But for me, it's a buy. I love it. I've rediscovered it. I'm having fun with it with the family. I'm having fun with it just in general out in the world. I did not back the big, fancy, stupid, giant version of it. That's stupid. I just said the word stupid. I'm going to say it 3 more times. It's stupid.
How do you really feel? About
it's
that.
Dumb, man. It's too big. What is with Bezier games and their giant things that nobody wants? I don't get it.
I think they're transitioning to a toy company, honestly.
Yeah, maybe.
They're right? Like, can we sell toys too? And the answer is like, not really.
We have giant cats and we have these big tiles for Ludwig. No, oh my nobody. Goodness.
Well, there you go. The cat can play on the tiles. That's
yeah, right. but yeah, like you don't expect to have like a trick-taking game, which is fairly abstract, be fairly thematic as well. And this one does it. I love it. So it's a buy for me.
Like I said, this was surprising. Played endless numbers of trick-taking games. I was a fan of trick-taking, I think, before you were a fan of trick-taking.
Way before, yeah.
And then you became a big fan of trick-taking, I think even more than I was. And having played trick-taking games from like back in the day, Spades and Hearts and stuff like that, and then again, seeing something brand new and inventive, and like you said, the betting mechanic was really interesting. That was a twist to the game itself. But just the idea of you have suits, but you really don't, and then there's this dwindling number of opportunities that actually lend itself to actually what can be possible in your hand, and how the other players play into that is so dynamic. There, it's, you know, typically when you play a trick-taking game, it's like the cards you have, the are the cards you have. You know, if it's a shredding game or a ladder game or something like that. And like here, the possibilities are always open and you can even win or somebody else can lose. It doesn't mean you're going to get the most points possible because, again, the betting and also the arrangement on the board as far as the tokens are concerned. So I like all of that. And it never at any point, and again, I don't have the giant cat or anything else as far as that's concerned, but it doesn't need to be anything more than that. Like, that's solid. This is a solid game that I think you mentioned earlier. Is it a classic? Is it a modern day classic? I think certainly it will keep its place in the trick taking echelon of great games out there because it's cute, but it's really smart. I think the smartness of the game will keep it around.
I think so. Like, I think this is up there with The Crew.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In terms of like recent modern trick-taking games, sure, that really just kill it, right? It's like The Crew, Cat in the Box, and maybe Fox in the Forest is like the three from the last 10 years that represent trick-taking to me and what it can do. Like, not just like what it is, because there's some classic ones that are amazing, but like modern trick-taking, like what can we do with this mechanic?
Sure.
And those three games really kind of explore it in interesting ways.
Yeah, I'll add just an honorable mention to that list, Diamonds. If you remember Diamonds
from great
back in, yep, the day too, I stumbled across that in my rearrangement / cleaning. I was like, oh, what the heck has this been? This is a game.
Right.
It's a game I remember. Where have you been all these years, hiding out all these diamonds behind your little thin bank shield, so to speak?
All right. Diamonds is fantastic. Yep.
Yeah. It's another one too that I think, again, I think Diamonds should be there, but I will say it because I am a fan of cuteness. I think the, yep, cuteness kind of carries over. It carries it up a step. So forgive me for that, but I think that is still a thing that happens out there. So
I'm with you.
Well, speaking of cuteness, I have a little tiny cute game. It's called Mini Rogue. Mini Rogue has had two Kickstarter backs. They had Mini Rogue with its expansions and then Mini Rogue the Council. I've had Mini Rogue, I guess at this point, almost a year. I picked this up at one of the booths over in Gen Con. I was like, I think I've seen this. I think I remember this. Again, I am not, solo games is not my thing, and co-op games can be my thing. And the hack and slash rogue kind of situation, it's fine. It's a thing. I'm down for that. So I got to pick up the base game of this. Haven't played the expansions or the second season, so can't speak to that directly. I know the second season just wrapped up, I think recently. But I got to play it in particular because it came out on Board Game Arena. And I was like, I have the game. I've been meaning to play the game. And I played it on Board Game Arena. And I was like, oh, I can play this. I can kind of blow through the rules because it's a rather small rule book to kind of pull through. Nothing too challenging or questionable as far as the game is concerned. So basically, you're looking at a roguelike mini micro game. It's another one of those small games. I don't think the box is terribly small. It's a typical card box size game. And it's a dungeon crawl. So you're going through the dungeon, face all the monsters and demons and scary stuff in order to get the mysterious ruby called the OG's Blood. That's basically the last baddie that you have to face in order to win the game. As I mentioned, you could play solo, which is the way I played it, or you could play as a co-op, two-player co-op. That's basically where it stops. And the game itself has a number of different characters you could choose from. So with the base game, you have four characters. You have a mage, a crusader, priestess, and rogue. And it's pretty cool because each of the characters have two special abilities, and they also have different stats to kind of start with as far as money, health, food, and other kind of fun stuff. And then as you go through the game with your character, you are facing a grid of 9 cards that are on the main board. Again, very easy to set up, and basically you are going to die. So you place your token if you have the basic version. If you have the fancy version, you have fancy stuff. But you place your token at the start of this 9-card grid on the top left. And then as the game goes, you make decisions on which of the two adjacent cards do you want to move towards in order to get to the final baddie at the bottom, if you're able to defeat the final monster. And again, there's all those kind of things like the Spider Queen and the Cursed Dragon, all kind of fun stuff, the ghoul and stuff like that. They only get stronger and worse as the game goes on. But of course, your XP goes up at the same time as well. You'll also get special abilities as far as experience is concerned, armor, health. Money is pretty cool in this game. Usually when games are this small, the market really isn't a thing. Here, it's a thing. You're going to pick up gold pieces in order to raise your health and pick up potions that allow you to kind of get through the game. The game primarily is rolling a handful of dice. At the start of the game, you have a character dice and there's a dungeon die. But there's also poison dice and curse dice, and you'll get additional characters' dice throughout the game. The character dice are your skills, and they're also your combat. So those dice are very important, D6s. And then the dungeon dice are there to determine how bad a baddie you are facing in there, or how bad of a situation might be in there. So you set up the 9 grid, you start exploring Orthagnol. You deal with skill checks, you deal with combat, dealing with monsters, of course. And then you try to avoid as much as the bad as you can until you get to the last person. And then the last person, you really try to mess up as much as possible. Along with your special abilities, along with the potions, you're going to have a number of opportunities to heal up and grow and expand your attack and your experience, which will give you more dice. And really, if you ever play a dice game, the only thing that you want in a dice game is more dice. This gives you more dice to roll, which is a lot of fun. And it's a quick, you know, fairly easy game. I honestly, when I threw it onto Board Game Arena, I was just like, I don't know the rules. I think it's simple enough. And basically you're clicking and rolling dice and it's telling you what the outcomes are. So you take the better outcomes, of course, and you avoid the bad stuff if you can. And my first playthrough, I almost got to the complete end. And again, since it's a roguelike game, you're meant to die, learn stuff, rearrange the cards, and go out there again. The game itself is high quality. I mean, the cards are really nice. The artwork is great. Nothing too fancy here. Again, if you get the expansion edition, great. Custom dice come along with the game. It's a great little game. Mini Rogue. If you're looking for a solo game and something quick and easy to play, it's a buy.
Cool. Yeah, that's a fun sounding game. I think I remember talking about this maybe when you bought it. It was like, this looks clever and cute and quick, and the solo component of it obviously always appeals to me. I feel like there's something new coming out for this soon, right? Or was it on Board Game Arena? Did you mention that?
It's on Board Game Arena. They did have their second campaign, which back not too long ago.
So, right. That was like back in April. Yeah.
So there'll be more content coming after this. Again, I'm not the biggest solo person, so you'll have to take Anthony's word as far as solos are concerned. But as far as someone who is typically not the biggest fan of solo games, I was able to get this out, able to enjoy it, and it didn't feel too small. And I like that about a solo game that's supposed to be a micro game, so to speak. Maybe with the other expansions, it's better. Or maybe with the other expansions, it's too much. We don't know, but maybe in the future we will know, and we'll do an episode on that.
Right. Yeah, that balance is hard. Like, is it too much? Is it too little? Like, I like too much. Give me a solo game that takes up the whole table.
It's true.
I'll play Mage Knight for 2 weeks. But a lot of people don't want that. I understand that.
Yeah, I think with a solo game, and I respect that as far as the big setup for the big game, the epic game, you're going to get to the table because you get everything lined up. But that becomes so much of the game time, I think.
Yeah. So,
again, I don't know. The micro games, again, we could do an episode where we just like rule that certain micro games aren't micro games. This is kind of micro. This is definitely like it's 9 cards that you're going to put on a table with a bunch of dice. It's fine.
Cool.
All right. So that's everything that we hit the table this week. Let's get on to our feature review. Our feature review this week, of course, is games that need an expansion. Now, do it now.
Bring it.
Come on. We already talked about this. It's so late in the show. Could these come out now? Please come out. We like to play these games.
We told you to do it.
You know, man.
Come on.
Some publishers, geez.
I don't listen.
They have one job, publish an expansion for a great game. so it could be better. Slackers, I tell you. Somebody out there.
Get on it.
All right, Anthony. So why don't you take us through what we're looking at for expansions?
All right. So we started this list back in 2018.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Are we that old yet?
We are. Man. We're so old. That's not even nearly how far back this podcast goes. That's like halfway through. That's the midpoint.
Wow, people, listen to all those episodes really quick. Catch up.
It's pre-pandemic, so you know it was like a million years ago.
That's true.
So we made a list of 10. We're going to run through those real quick and tell you, did it release an expansion or are we still waiting?
Aw.
Yeah. So number 10 on that list back in the day was Photosynthesis.
The tree game with the growing of the trees.
We were super hot on this game back in the day. It did release an expansion 2 years later. And it's called Under the Moonlight.
Yes.
So it introduced animals.
It did.
Which was cool.
Uh-huh.
And then you have the moon kind of turning the opposite direction of the sun and casting moonlight throughout
smart.
The woods.
Very smart.
So it seemed really cool and interesting. I'll be perfectly honest. I had sold my copy of the game by then. So apparently the lack of an expansion for the first 3 years of its existence just like burned me out and I was done. But, someday I'll try that and I'll let you know.
I remember coming out with this expansion. I thought it was a very smart expansion and I did not pick up the expansion. I will also admit on that. I think, as you mentioned, I think the expansion took a little too long to get out there. And I think it got a lot of gameplay, like the base game got a lot of gameplay. I'm still wondering again, I still have the base game. I recently moved it. I'm like, oh, this is the thing. This is here. So maybe one day? I don't know. Again, this is always the hard part, too, when you play a game out. And you're like, I feel kind of burnt out about this game. It does have an expansion. I don't know. So I'm not sure. But again, I'm glad it does. And it's out there. And it seems thematically to work. I can't speak to if it practically works. It's got a 6.9 on BoardGameGeek. So kind of? Kind of.
Maybe. I guess we'll find out. Yeah. I don't know. It's not really there for us, but it exists. So they pulled it off and thank you. You're welcome, etc.
Woof. We did it.
We did it.
I'm telling you.
All right. The next one is Civilization and New Dawn, which we famously played at a PAX.
Oh my goodness.
We learned nothing about the game and I bought it anyways because I'm a crazy person. But it turned out the game's actually very good, and it jumped up my playlist. And I was like, this game still needs an expansion because it's a Fantasy Flight game, and all Fantasy Flight games need expansions. They released one.
They did?
In the midst of the pandemic.
Wow.
And then it disappeared because Fantasy Flight is just chaotic nonsense at this point. It is a fantastic expansion to this game.
Yes.
It is rated an 8.3 on BoardGameGeek. I would agree with that. It kind of fills a lot of the gaps that the game had. Mm-hmm. So the original game is just like, it's very Euro-y. It doesn't really have exploration or military elements to it that are built in there. This adds those. The one side effect of the game is that it makes it a fair bit longer.
Oh, no.
Right? Yeah. Like, the game is fairly short, generally, for a Civ game. It's like 90 minutes. To 2 hours. With the expansion, I would say you're looking at 2 to 3 hours. I'm fine with that because I like me some long Civilization games, and I really like the way this game implements the Civilization elements. It also adds a few more civs, which is always nice. It adds a fifth player, which is stupid, but you can ignore that if you want. I will say too that like during the heart of the pandemic, they also released a solo expansion that's a print and play. It was not part of Terra Incognito, but it is compatible with that, but it's also very good. So, Fantasy Flight did right by this game, despite kind of their slow just decline and death over the last
Terrible.
4 years.
Yeah.
But it is great. If you can get the game with the expansion, it is fantastic.
I have not played with the expansion, and I think, honestly, because the expansion was not there when I did play the base game or did consider picking out the base game, I didn't pick it up. I think if this expansion was out at that time, I would have picked it up and the expansion as well. So
right.
It's kind of heartbreaking. I don't know. Again, like you said, with all the chaoticness that goes on there. I don't know if we'll ever see this as far as like a revised, you know, new version of it. So,
right.
Yeah. But we did again. We did a thing.
Yeah, we did it. It happened.
Yes.
All right. The next one was Zulkin, the Mayan calendar. I think this was one of your picks. Mm-hmm. And it was Simone Luciani and Daniela Ticini's first game together.
Aww.
It has an expansion, Tribes and Prophecies, which adds a lot of asymmetry with 13 tribes. But we felt like it was still missing something.
Yes.
Right.
And it had like little tiny mini expansions, but that really wasn't what it was missing. And some of the problems of the Tribes and Prophecies was it overcorrected.
Right.
So now, you know, when you typically played the game, you were going to play one of, I think, three or four different paths to victory. And now based on your particular faction, that was your thing. Like, that's it.
Right.
So it certainly needed more. And right. I think, again, like we talked about previously, like I think as brilliant as it is, I think the base game just kind of burnt it out.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, and they just didn't come back to it because they were like, oh, we did a thing. This was the thing. You were like, not so much, but yeah.
All right. Next up, we had Jump Drive, which was the very quick, very accessible kind of spin on Race for the Galaxy from Thomas Lehman. It was like a 30-minute version of Race for the Galaxy. But it was like not very much in the box. The game was very quick. Not a lot happened.
Sure.
They did release an expansion just last year.
I mean, what the heck? Wow.
5 years after our episode.
Took them long enough.
Right? And 6 years after the game came out, they're like, here's an expansion out of nowhere. And it kind of went nowhere because people are like, for what game? What are we talking about?
What's a jump drive? I don't remember that game.
Yeah, what is that game? Is that even in print? What are you talking about? Rio Grande, never change. So new game cards. New start worlds, new goals, material for a fifth player because boo.
Because they love
and,
you. They, because
and a bunch
you.
Of challenges for solo play. Let's ignore the fifth player. Let's ignore it. They don't love me, Chris. They hate me. Stupid fifth player. So it's more asymmetry, more solo options. It's just more options in general. People seem to like it. I did not pick it up because it's been 7 years and I have long since sold this game.
But
I'm glad they came back to it.
I'm glad too. I own Jump Drive, but again, I didn't even know this actually came out because I felt like it was done. It needed more, but I felt like it was done. I'm glad that they listened to us because that makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's great that it happened, but it's crazy that it took so long.
It's true.
All right. Next up, we had Aura and Labora from Uwe Rosenberg.
I've heard of that guy.
Yeah. That guy who does all these games. No expansions. There's a mini expansion from a magazine that came out yes. a couple years ago with some wonder tiles. But it's just Bor and Labora.
Yeah. It certainly needed a little bit more because it was another one of those games where there was I wouldn't say a path to victory, but there was certainly a best path. The only thing I could say that kind of quasi... It doesn't count as an expansion, but I talked about this recently. Black Forest is somewhat in the vein of Aura Labora and of Glass Road as far as mechanics are concerned. So maybe this was in the back of their head for quite some time. But it was re-released, Aura Labora. I have the new version of it, but nothing else beyond that.
Right, yeah. All right, next up, Antique 2. Matt Gertz's game about fighting for civilization in the Mediterranean. It's a sequel to Antique. So it's already kind of implementing and re-implementing, you know, what was done in that original game, which also did not have an expansion. Antique 2 does not have an expansion. Antique Duellum, which was the two-player version of this, also no expansions, but multiple versions thereof. I think for this one, we were just hoping for, like, it's a very tightly designed, well-balanced game, but it'd be interesting to see more things happening, more maps even, from a designer like Matt Gertz, who does games like Concordia with like 43 maps. We never got that, which is fine because we still have Concordia, but and this game is still brilliant, but it remains on its own. No new stuff.
I think the challenge or problem with the game was, if there is one, and I would argue there is, in a multiplayer game, if you are one of, if not the last player in the game, everything by the time you get to take your turn is kind of taken up, and you are chasing for scraps, and you almost have to go towards the market just completely in order to pull a win off in that game. I remember doing that.
Yeah. So it gets very expensive to build in places when everybody else has already been.
And I don't think there's not really a good fix to that. Concordia has, you know, resources that kind of compensate for that. Here, not so much.
Yeah, for sure. I do love it, though, as like a really quick playing six player game.
Mm-hmm.
Glass Road, you kind of mentioned already,
yep,
as kind of in that Aura and Labora pedigree. No major expansions, a bunch of promo packs, but that's about it. We also have on the list First Class, which famously has space in the box for expansions, and then nothing came of that.
And it went out of print, which
yeah,
broke my heart.
The game is out of print. They released several modules. There was like a module F, module G,
uh-huh,
as promos, of course, but that's it. And then, yeah, no major expansion for it since.
I mean, it was built with expansions in mind. So,
yeah,
First Class, all aboard the Orient Express, to the point where you had like a murder kind of mystery, mm-hmm, expansion that you could play as. So when they had these little mini kind of expansions that you could throw in, awesome. And then like the game's out of print, which is, it's terrible. Cause it's one, for me, it's one of the best games. And I still can't understand why this is not in print.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's such a good game. man, it's a shame.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, however, did get an expansion famously on Kickstarter. Big one. Made a lot of money. Grand Austria Hotel Let's Waltz came out in 2021.
Yeah, that has like the expansions are bigger than the game. There's just so much.
Yeah, so much stuff packed in here. So this was on Kickstarter. It made a ton of money. They later have re-released it into retail. It took a long time though, like almost two full years to get this into retail. I think you and I both backed this.
We did.
We famously played it on my back porch in the sun.
Yeah, that was
got a nice sunburn out of it.
We did.
And it did not really fix the fundamental problem of the game. So it's a good expansion, but it doesn't really resolve the issue of like the imbalance in the deck.
That was so surprising that they went to the lengths of like, it's two kind of mini expansions. I wouldn't even say mini expansions. It's like two full expansions.
Right. In it. Five modules. There's a lot there.
There's so much in there. And you're like, clearly they're going to do the one thing that was a problem about the game. And that was always the thing I harped about. Like, there's just one problem in this game. You just got to address this. And they're like, we see that, but instead of like making the game a little stronger and tighter and streamlined, now there's so many different modules at play and different theaters to play your figures and stuff that it kind of takes away the problem of the deck by just making everything else equally important or just more stuff. I don't like that. I'm just,
no.
It was a lot. It's not bad. It was just a lot. So
it's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yep. That's where it is. It's a lot. Number one on the list from 2018 was Spirium, which we've talked about at length. It's one of my favorite games. I love this game, but I can't help but admit the last phase of the game, the C cards,
yeah,
are the same every time you play them.
It's true.
There are only nine of them, so it's always the same nine cards in a slightly different permutation, whereas the A and the B decks are more than the number you need. So if you've played the game before, you have a huge advantage over people who have not. You know how much the cards are going to cost, you know which ones are going to be, you know where they're going to come out. It makes the game not as fun if you're new to the game, and it makes it harder to teach. And just honestly, even a mini expansion, a promo would have been huge for this, although I would gladly take a big Kickstarter reboot with all the fancy stuff, with new content on top of it. But we just haven't seen it. It's been 11 years, we still haven't seen it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously you're pointing out the real challenge with the game. If it wasn't locked into that certain card draw, like those cards have to come out. And it really, it could even be a mini expansion. Just some more cards. Just throw in a half a deck of more cards, and I think it's fine. I'd like to see it more of it. I think it's certainly something that if a new publisher would take it on, this could get, I mean, it's a small game, but this could get a like brass kind of version of it, because I think it has that same kind of literal Spirium element that Nuculum kind of took off with. So it could have been a thing. It certainly could have.
Yeah. No, it's a shame. So it's still up there. It's still in my top 10 for whatever reason, despite that. But it's not doing what we want it to. So what we wanted to do real quickly here at the end is add a few more games to the list. Some games that have come out since then that are also due for expansion. So we're kind of rapid fire through. We have a good number of lit games here that we think would also benefit from new content. First up, we have one that, Chris, I know you added, After the Empire.
Yes. After the Empire was a game that I was hotly anticipating. I remember I watched it on Kickstarter. I watched it then on GameFound. And then eventually I picked it up. And I did not get a chance. I did try to get all the extra little plastic characters and stuff. But that's really not the expansion part that it needs. It is cool to build this little castle. It is cool to get the refugees to help you out and the buildings to help you out. But there's nothing more than that. And there's no player interaction other than maybe you could take a worker placement spot. There needs to be player interaction. So please give us a way to attack adjacent castles or give us something else to do, because it's really, do you want one of the two cards that are out there available, and do you want to upgrade a particular thing on your castle? That's it. And then it just needs more. It's a good game, but it's incomplete as far as I feel. Like it's a play, but just a play, honestly, because you're building the castle. If it wasn't for building the castle, it probably would be a dodge, just because there's not enough there.
Yeah, for sure. For me, Black Angel is one.
Oh, yeah.
This is a game from 2019. This is the last like big game that I hunted down at Gen Con. This was the Gen Con before COVID. And it is Trois in Space, and I love so much about it. I played it like 10 times the month after I got back from Gen Con. I really loved it. I haven't played it since. And part of the reason for that is there's not really a core narrative to the game. There's no like thing you're doing. There's no like journey you're going on. Trois is interesting because you are developing defenses. You're fighting off, you know, these invaders. You are fulfilling these requirements for these different nobles. And that's kind of missing from this game, where you have like everything's being run by robots and you have all these things out in space, but it doesn't all congeal in a way that makes sense. So I would love an expansion that gave me a narrative, or barring a narrative, some kind of central focus the way Trois does, especially with like the ladies expansion, which really kind of adds some depth and focus around the elements of what you're doing in the city of Trois. So they never came back to this game. It was a huge release back in 2019. It was like one of the hot games from Asmodee. You know, Tool artwork, like the crew from Pearl Games coming back. But alas, we never got more content. And I don't know that we will at this point. I think Pearl Games has shut down. And I'm not sure that they're going to come back to this one in particular after this much time. But I still hold on to it. I still really would like to get this back to the table with the great group of people, but a good expansion would really help me get there.
I remember seeing this at a game night. People were playing in another room. I was really excited about playing it, and the people were just puzzled and perplexed.
It is a very hard game to teach.
Yeah.
Like, even if you've played Trois, you're like, it's like Trois, but then these 11 things are different. And I'm like, what? Like, yeah, these 11 things. And it just, you have to play it twice in a row almost, which is a tough sell.
Sure.
I got lucky. I got a group that was willing to do it, and then we played it a bunch. But since then, I have not played it.
I mean, maybe for a future episode, there should be games that should be simplified, like a new version where it's a little smaller just to kind of introduce you to play the game. I don't agree with this whole, you got a new game, play the basic boring version of it, which is going to take you 2 or 3 hours to play, and then play the fun version. I don't like that. Give me a fun version in a smaller version that you've crafted that way, because that makes a lot more sense.
100%. Mm-hmm. All right, next one up here that I see you've bolded is Brazil Imperial.
So going through my collection, for many reasons, what am I going to do with these games, right? Like, and this was one of my most hotly anticipated games. This was down in South America. It did not come up to the US for quite some time. I think it was Portal Games that brought it up. And it was quite expensive, because that's what Portal does with games. And I got it to the table. Everyone said it was a scythe killer. And it's beautiful. It's got so many great elements. And it was tremendously disappointing. And I just, like, I wanted to cry. I didn't cry. But I wanted to cry, because, like, the beauty of the game, the craftsmanship, everything went into this, which is wonderful. It's just not enough. And with Scythe, with its like four or five or six expansions now at this point, like, can you give me one that just makes this game better? Just give me one, because it's just limited in itself. And I think it's suffering from that. So it's really a plea. I'm telling you, like, I don't want to get rid of this game. I want you to give me an expansion. I will pay the monies. So to make the game get better, so I can actually get this game to the table. Because it's beautiful, and it's historical reenactment, and it has a lot of really great elements to it. And I, as much as I love Scythe, I wouldn't mind something killing it. So, please?
Yeah.
You know?
I felt exactly the same about this game. It is on my trade pile, but I would also like to be able to keep it if I could.
Yeah, so if you could do that quickly, we both would appreciate that.
Yeah, get on it. Come on. Yep. Star Wars Rebellion, I threw on the list, even though the game is brilliant and the expansion makes the game even better. Because I feel like the game could benefit from some more ground-level intrigue. And the reason I say that is we have now Andor, the fantastic show about that ground-level intrigue and what happened before Rogue One, leading up to all of the materials of this game, right? The expansion that makes the game so good is Rise of the Empire, which is based on Rogue One. So give us an expansion that builds on that, that goes back even further and shows us like the rise of Andor.
So could this be like Hunt for the Ring that you play before you play War of the Ring, and it kind of sets you up for Rebellion?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. Like a hidden movement type thing. Like, let's find Andor, because that's basically what that whole first series is.
Yeah.
Where is this guy?
What's up with this guy?
Yeah, what's going on? I would just love some more political intrigue in this game, right? Like, it's a lot about space battles and managing the planets and where are people hiding. It's big in scope. Give me a component of it that's small in scope. Like going back to like Rune Wars, even, where you have this big epic battle over this huge map, but then you also have your little hero kind of jumping around doing cool stuff. War of the Ring does that too. I would love to see more of that at a Star Wars Rebellion.
And I think it's honestly the show itself is, again, we haven't seen the new part that's coming up soon, but the first half is like, honestly, I feel like the best depiction of the Empire and the political machinations that are happening. So that would be fantastic.
Yep. 100%. A few more here. Let's see. We got Gaia Project.
Sure.
That never had an expansion. Now part of that is the reason for that is that game kind of incorporated a lot of what the other expansions for Terra Mystica were doing. They have very recently announced the Lost Fleet expansion coming out later this year, but we don't really know enough about it to know what that's doing or why it's doing it. And I've already made this list, so there you go, folks. But it has new factions and new stuff and new maps and things. But I would really like to see them kind of expand what that tech board does, because it's space and tech boards are like, that's what space is. So give me more of that.
Can we get a graphical redesign while you're at it?
I wish.
Because it's Big Brother is just, it crushes it as far as the artwork is concerned. Like, it's just,
I know, I don't get it. Like, this, you know, Dennis Lohausen, who does the artwork here, has done the artwork on so many games. Also did the artwork on Terra Mystica, but it's so much better. Like, why is it so much worse in Gaia Project?
This reminds me of like space artwork maybe in like the 1950s, where like the telescopes weren't that good, so they didn't realize that like space is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And like it is, it's just cosmically just enticing. And yet when you play that game, it's like you just want to, you want to fall asleep. It's just it's
yeah, we've been spoiled by a lot of Ian O'Toole space artwork lately. It's though true. Like just bright and colorful and vibrant and neon.
Well, honestly, like terraforming, you know, not Terraforming Mars. I mean, that's a whole other space.
No, not that one. Yeah. That's the worst.
Terra Mystica, right? The artwork was so good that it overlooked some of the gameplay elements. Like it was fine. This was the opposite, right? Like you leaned into like, those tracks, stick a thing on this.
It's not pretty. It is not pretty. It's a great game, but it's not pretty.
It's a great game. Absolutely.
All right. Next one up, we have Kanban EV. So the reason I put this on the list, and I put this one on the list, is
you would.
Vital Lacerda makes big, brilliant, super thematic, heavy Euro games, right? And one of the best expansions that's come out in the last few years, it's Four on Mars. It's the Martian Invasion expansion with like multiple modules that really transformed that game into something interesting and super thematic and cooperative and potentially solo and whatever you want to do with it. I would love to see a similar treatment to really any of his games, but I think Kanban EV could be particularly interesting because you have a character in there with Sandra, like your angry, mean, kind of floor manager going around, like pushing you around, especially in the solo mode. You have this beautiful artwork and layout from Ian O'Toole. You have just generally the feeling of like building up a business, and you could do that over time. You could make that into like a legacy type campaign type thing. There's a lot you could do here. But honestly, apply everything I just said to Vinyos or the Gallerist, and I'd be happy with that too. But yeah, Kanban, give us an expansion. The new games, I don't really want an expansion for Weather Machine. I don't really want an expansion for Inventions. I want it for one of the older games that really does interesting things.
Sure, agreed.
We have Mechs vs. Minions, which was a huge mega launch from Riot Games back in 2016. And that was it. That's all they did.
It's true.
They're like, here's a game. We have released a game. And then they did like another like Telstones type thing, which people hated. Oof. A couple years later. But this one is in the top 100 of all time. It is a programming style game in which like, you have all these different miniatures fully painted in this big sprawling thing with multiple different campaign elements to it. It's cooperative. And the game is just like, it's really good. And like, I know, like, Chris, you've mentioned to me, I don't know League of Legends very well, but you've mentioned that it doesn't really represent the theme very well.
Almost not at all. Honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so, some of the characters, but that's about it.
Yeah. So, like, I understand that part of it, but as someone who doesn't know the theme, I really enjoy the game.
Sure.
But they never came back. And whether it means they didn't make money or this was just a passion project or what, I don't know. But it sold pretty well. They sold like 60,000 copies, which is a lot for a board game, but maybe not enough for a video game publisher.
It had to be a passion project because, I mean, it was relatively cheap. I mean, relatively. Yeah. I mean, I think it was $75.
For what you got, it was very cheap.
Yes. And
like in today's money, it would be $250.
Easy. It was high quality. And it had, I think, the app integration as far as storytelling components were concerned. So even though it was not the game and I was rather disappointed with it, it was still fine. And again, if they did an expansion, they could certainly incorporate a lot of the materials that are already there. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole universe there to draw from.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, Marco Polo 2. We had a big sprawling expansion for Voyages of Marco Polo. We did not get a similar expansion for Marco Polo 2. Bring us back to Europe. Bring us back to Venice. Huh?
Yeah, I don't disagree with this. And I is it that they just, like, people wanted the shipping, the movement elements to be so much more fleshed out? And they did it, and then they just were done. Because, again, like the first one had so many expansions and little modules and giveaways and stuff like that. So,
Yeah, like this almost felt like an expansion that they turned into a full game.
Yeah.
Which in turn would not get its own expansion, which I get. Oh, well, it's a good game.
It is.
I still prefer the original.
Weirdly enough, I do, too. I think that you always would think the new version would be profoundly better in so many different ways. And it's like, it's fine.
Right.
And it's different. And you have to, and I think it almost, it should have that sticker on the cover, which is like, you must move in this game. You must ship. It's not just contracts anymore, kids.
Right.
Because if you don't know that, you're going to have problems all day long.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Like, more stuff, please.
Absolutely.
All right. Next one up here on the list is another one I put on the list before seeing that they just announced an expansion for it. But, you know, we'll run with it.
Look,
because
you put it out there. They heard you. Quantum Entanglement. Move on, my friend. You got it.
Yeah. They are picking up the brainwaves that I put down 4 days ago when I set up this.
This is what I'm saying.
Barcelona.
Uh-huh.
One of the best games of last year,
yes,
from Dana Garcia and Board and Dice, is getting an expansion, Passeig de Gràcia, which is an iconic part of Barcelona, which is a much smaller, obviously, you know, function of the whole total thing. It's a road that will be connecting Barcelona and the former town of Gràcia, which is now a district of the city, in the rebuilding of the city. So it's like zooming in a little bit on the game, or on the element of the game within that city. What that looks like or how it's going to develop, I don't know. There's not a lot of information here, but it is set to come out this year, probably at Essen. There's also new scoring tiles, new Sagrada Familia tiles, new building bonus tiles, all that stuff. Good promos. So it's Board and Dice. They generally support their stuff.
Sounds good.
Zapotec is another Board and Dice game that I really enjoyed a few years ago, but kind of ran its course fairly quickly for me. It's a Fabio Lupiano game. So it's quick. It's like an hour, hour and a half tops. And it's all about like building out these different elements of the Zapotec, like different little plastic pyramid pieces throughout this kind of relatively tight map. And it's just one of those games, which Lopiano's games tend to do, where if you've played it enough times, you kind of get a good sense of what it's doing and what it's trying to do. And it kind of fades away, right? So it's not that the game is bad all of a sudden. It's not that I don't want to play it anymore. It's that it just doesn't pop to the top of my head as a game I want to get to the table. I would love to see further support for it. It's a good system. It's a good baseline of rules. Nothing else came for it. And it's only been 2 years. We might see more. I just mentioned Gaia Project, which has been out for 8 years, and all of a sudden there's an expansion coming out this year. So maybe. But Zapotec, I think, is an underrated game.
Hear that?
All right. And the last one on the list here from you, Chris, is Sanctum.
Yeah, Sanctum was another game that was going to give us that big Diablo 2 experience, with a bunch of players at the table doing some really interesting character development as far as like moving things around to upgrade your characters. And you go down the road and you face a lot of baddies along the way. And then you face the ultimate kind of baddie. And then like, it's not the greatest thing. It kind of where it, like the game has such a great buildup for the character and for the multiple players at the table, and that end just doesn't bring it home. And there's just nothing else to play beyond that. So it's almost like you're playing role player to kind of build up your character. You're running through some basic kind of scenarios where you fight a couple of guys, and then like the big end is not there. And I think it needed an expansion. The game kind of got lost and disappeared and did the ether. I think if this came out with an expansion with a one or two or three more final boss monster kind of things, I think it would revive the game big times. I think this would be a big seller for CGE. I think it just, maybe because of the pandemic? I don't know. Like, it was three quarters of the way done. It just needs a little bit more to be great.
Yeah, this was totally one of those games that came out like late 2019.
Yeah.
Maybe would have built during 2020, yeah, but completely died instead. Because I'm looking at my rating. I gave it an 8.
Yeah.
I really like this game, yeah, but I haven't played it since 2020 because it just there's no reason to go back to it. It's not doing anything interesting. It doesn't like evolve over the space of the game.
No.
It needs more.
It needs more. Again, more big monsters at the end or some side quests or some or companions or something else to go along with it. But when it came out, it was going to be the game for CGE because they make so many great games. And then I remember the pandemic hitting and just like never heard a word about it or an expansion and still has not gotten one. So we would be really happy if you would release an expansion, my friends. CCG.
Please do. Yes.
All right, everyone. So there you go. Our hopes, our dreams, our fantasies of great expansions coming out to enliven these wonderful games that hopefully will get some table time with a great new expansion. Until next time, this is Chris.
And Zip.
And we'll save you a seat at the table. Thank you, everyone.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.